Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is our guest host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Welcome to Bill Buckmaster Show. We're broadcasting today from the Green Thing Socolow Village Studios. Welcome. We'd love you to stick around. We've got an interesting show coming up. If you'd like to interact, give us a call on the Buckmaster Live Line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. That phone number is 790-2040. Now, if you've made a purchase lately, you might have noticed prices are going up, especially on electronics and new vehicles. If you've really been paying attention, you may be aware that we're experiencing a critical international shortage of the one thing that most of us don't think about, but is an essential component in things that make our everyday lives function, microchips. Joining us for the first half of the hour of the Buckmaster Show is a gentleman recognized as one of the foremost experts in the industry. Dr. Handel Jones is the founder and CEO of, founder and CEO of International Business Strategies and regularly interfaces with global leaders in the electronics industry. His company's research is often quoted in the Wall Street Journal, The Economist, and Forbes. His list of clients is just a who's who of electronic manufacturers. This guy knows what he's doing. Dr. Jones, thank you for sharing your expertise with us on the Buckmaster Show.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure to be here.
Well, I tell you, Doctor, amazing kind of opportunity here. Ford Motor Company is forecasting it may be short as many as 1.1 million vehicles in 2021. The average price of a new vehicle climbed 8.4% in the first quarter of the year. How did we get here?
Well, the reason we got here is because we underestimated demand. When COVID-19 hit, everybody slowed down purchasing of many things, especially automobiles. But then we had a recovery, and recovery was very fast. And the fast recovery was not anticipated by the automobile companies. Now, some companies like Apple, they placed significant orders ahead of time. They dealt with their vendors 2 or 3 years out. But the automobile companies, they have the just-in-time issue. So they were a bit slow to respond to the upturn. But even though this is an upturn in demand right now, we do project continuing strong growth for semiconductors. To give you a perspective, the average American consumes about $150 a year of semiconductors, either through smartphones or cars. In 2030, it's going to be up to maybe $250 per person, maybe 300, potentially doubling. And the semiconductor market in 2030 will be about $1.2 trillion, which is about two times what it is today. So semiconductors are in everything we do pretty much today. We have them in the smartphones, automobiles, refrigerators, televisions, etc. And what happens is that every year, the amount of semiconductors in automobiles and smartphones goes up. So when you go to electric vehicles, you're going to have a huge consumption of batteries. But even without electric vehicles, every year, the automobile companies buy more semiconductors per car. And Ford is a good example. And Ford basically will recover. But we have a total this year, I think, globally of about 80 million automobiles. But the potential purchasing is about 88 million.
So we're
10% down.
Dr. Jones, is this just a supply, a demand side problem, or supply or both? Because wasn't there a fire at a plant in Japan? We got lockdowns. There was a drought in Taiwan. I mean, is this maybe sort of a perfect storm of things we're witnessing here?
The biggest issue is the rapid increase in demand. So because of COVID-19, you know, people stayed at home, so they bought more PCs, basically become a PC for every person almost. They bought more televisions. They bought more things that had electronics in them. So at the same time, though, yeah, we did have the problems in Texas. We have the problems in Taiwan. We have the problems in also in China, in Japan. But the biggest impact, which is going to have a long-term impact, not just short-term impact, is this big increase in demand. So supply will come back to pretty much the same level as before, you know, within the next month or so. But demand will continue to be very strong.
So, sir, again, keep in mind, I'm not as nowhere near as educated as you. But as in a comparison, we had the great toilet paper scare of 2020, where people didn't really need it, but they were afraid they might not have it. So they went out and they just started buying it all up. Did we have a similar problem here with the microchips on the manufacturer side where they said, you know, we think we see a hiccup coming, we're going to double our order and just let them sit on the shelves?
Well, we've been tracking inventory, and we don't see a big surge in inventory because companies have to disclose inventory. So the semiconductor supply chain involves multiple steps. So you have what's called wafer processing. So foundry vendors do that. Intel does that, and Intel, of course, is going to expand in Arizona. We don't see any excess inventory in that part. We have companies that design chips. These are basically Qualcomm and NXP and a whole bunch of them. We don't see any inventory in that arena. You have distributors that distribute the parts. They're basically very short supply. When we look at the end equipment, I mean, there are no excess cars sitting there, right?
Right.
So basically, this is not like the toilet paper. This is a real surge in demand. And, you know, demand for automobiles was down last year, but this year it's up significantly, and it's going to go up next year, provided we don't have a recession and so on.
Doctor, again, just educate me. Are you okay taking phone calls from our listeners, Doctor?
Well, no problem at all.
Okay. Real quick before we go to Matt, hold on, we want to get you. But one, just again, second uneducated question, Doctor. Do microchips have a shelf life like bananas? I mean, if I'd bought one last year, could I have it sitting in my warehouse, or has technology outpaced that chip and it's no longer good to me? I mean, does it need to be sort of just-in-time sort of stuff?
In many industries, no. If you look at the automobile industry, a semiconductor chip will generally last about 7 years. And so the automobile basically lasts, you know, 20 years or 15 years. Smartphones, basically, they do have designs like Apple brings up new phones every year. But again, Apple actually doesn't have excess inventory, and they don't have excess parts, and they're a bit tight on demand right now. So some of those products, yeah. But what the semiconductor companies are doing now, though, suppliers, they're saying, if you order this part, and you have to order it at least 6 months ahead, maybe in some cases 9 months ahead, if you give us the order, you have to pay. Mm-hmm. If you decide you don't want to take it, you have to pay. But lead times are going up now to 6 months, 9 months, and if you want to buy a new part, you have to plan a year ahead.
Dr. Matt called us on the Rincon Ventures Real Estate Property Management Live Line. Matt, what's your question or comment for Dr. Jones?
Yeah, you're answering a lot of them. Very, very good discussion. TSMC CEO recently discussed this issue, suggesting that the supply chain for them would be recalibrated within 6 months, whereas most of the national industry representatives seem to indicate we may be in a five-year slump in correcting supply and demand due to all these things that you referred to, the pandemic, the supply interruptions. Also, could you address Huawei and the geopolitical consequences of China with regards to what moves that they may make geopolitically that could affect the supply chain? Thank you.
Wow, you're very smart. I've got to compliment you. So we don't know TSMC very well. Their capacity investment this year is about $30 billion. Last year, they invested about $20 billion. So they're up 50%. And they're saying that over the next 3 years, they'll invest $100 billion. So we track what they do in terms of the various technologies and various locations and so on. And we hope they will do significant investment in Arizona. But we think that with most of their products, by the end of this year, the middle of next year, we will have demand-supply balance. And we think that's going to occur across most industries. Now, we are looking at 2023 as a potential downturn, maybe some softening of the economy. When you do have shortages, there tends to be over-investment. So 2023 could be a slight correction. But then going forward to 2030, as I mentioned, we're seeing the semiconductor market doubling. So capacity has to double. So we see potential shortages out to 2030. So regarding what's happening in China, you know, Huawei or HiSilicon was a big buyer of wafers, and they bought them for smartphones, and they actually became the second largest smartphone vendor in the world. Well, with the stopping of semiconductors, they spun off part of their business called Honor. But other Chinese companies, Xiaomi, Oppo, Vivo, they took up the slack.
Doctor, we've got to take a quick break real quick, if you don't mind holding that thought, because sure. When I come back, I do want to talk, you know, not all chips are created equal. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia, sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. This portion of the Buckmaster Show has been presented by Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's is located on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise and is mouthwatering. They're open for breakfast and lunch from 6:30 a.m. to 2 p.m. Of course, please treat yourself to their pastries, including that famous Danish Kringle. Mona's Danish Bakery.com or BuckmasterShow.com for a link to Mona's Danish Bakery. We'll be right back.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at VeroAmorePizza.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show, folks. This is your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia, sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. We're here in the Green Things Sokolo Village studio. Since 1970, Green Things has been your go-to place for gardening needs. Green Things is on a lovely 13-acre site that's also home to Sokolo Village and all those fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and artworks. Green Things on River Road, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park, and on the web at greenthingsaz.com and sokolovillage.com. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got an international expert in the microchip industry joining us today. If you'd like to interact, give us a call on the Buckmaster Live Line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. That number locally is 790-2040. Dr. Jones, coming back to really that caller, what they mentioned before, and just one of my questions, as I understand it, not all chips are made equal. So a fab plant may do a chip that works in vehicles, but a different plant is doing chips that go in phones or toasters or toothbrushes, correct? And they just can they pivot on a dime like that or not necessarily?
It depends on the market. If you look at the automobile industry, the requirements for quality and reliability is very high. And the projects have to last, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, and work in very rough environments. So if you're running a chip for a smartphone and you want to change that factory to do chips for a car, it takes you 2 years in terms of the qualification process and so on. So that's why the automobile industry right now is having these problems, because you can't just take a factory that's making chips for consumer where they have to last, a couple of years, and then make chips for the automobile industry without extensive qualification. It's roughly 2 years.
So not very bright guy like me, doctor, would say, well, if there's a shortage, let's just build more factories. But then I come to learn that plant in Phoenix, the Intel plant, that was a $10 billion with a B dollar investment. I think the new Taiwan semiconductor plant they're looking at in Phoenix is $12 billion. So it's not just like putting up a new coffee stand.
No, and the Intel, I think, is actually $20 billion. And Intel investment this year is $20 billion. The Taiwanese company is $30 billion. Samsung is $31 billion. So these are big investments, but the returns are big. And one of the reasons we have the shortages right now is the U.S. let Asia take the lead. And basically, effectively, Asia does about 70% of the manufacturing. U.S. does about 15% of the wafer processing. In design, U.S. is superb. U.S. is superb. But by the way, China is not a big player in the semiconductor supply chain. China is a big importer. A very small amount of chips are coming from China. They come from Taiwan. They come from Korea. Some from Japan. But it's really Korea and Taiwan right now, not mainland China, that's actually making a lot of these chips.
Now, doctor, that's something I definitely want to ask, because I hear rumblings out there in other sectors of our nation. You're an expert in China. I've heard it described, sir, as the balance right now was sort of like the equivalent of the nuclear Cold War, where nobody wanted mutual assured destruction, so we left the fab plants alone. But if China were to make a move on Taiwan, what kind of disruptions will we see in that market? Significant, I would think.
Well, if you look at the supply from Taiwan, is probably about, within the non-memory business, it's probably about 60% of total supply. And to make up for that would be 5 years, 8 years or more. The other side of the coin is that China doesn't have good manufacturing for semiconductors. They do design, so they need Taiwan. Mainland China needs Taiwan for its chip industry. And of course, mainland China is making big investments now in design of chips to compete with Intel, to compete with Qualcomm, to compete with all the strength we have in the U.S. And that's another danger for the U.S., is that as they strengthen, we need to be able to control the supply chains, not just from Taiwan, but also from have them in the U.S.
Sir, along those lines, if you're an engineer, you're extremely qualified, you've supervised a huge number of engineers. I may be reading too many books, doctor, but what is to prevent a bad guy from putting something, a backdoor in a chip, and then someday somebody flips a button and stuff starts falling out of the sky?
From a hardware point of view, there was a claim in the past that somebody had put in a secret chip in terms of the iPhone. But it's very difficult to put another chip inside the chip because these chips are so complicated. The other side of the coin, though, is that in software, unless you have good protection of the chip, somebody can actually do something malicious in software and destroy what you're doing. And if they go into software in a data center, that can be catastrophic. You saw what happened with the pipeline. That's a small kind of event that could, but it's an indicator of the kinds of things that we need to protect against, where we need to have very good security, which means the full supply chain of hardware and also the full supply chain and control of software. But it's a very good point. We have to really watch out for that kind of problem. And as you could see, you saw with the pipeline, the problems it caused. But that's a minor part of our ecosystem.
Mm-hmm. So I guess the Biden administration is asking for, I believe, $37 billion to help seed bringing more of that manufacturing back stateside. I'm guessing, Doctor, you support that concept overall, like I do.
Yeah, we definitely support it. And I'm a believer. I've always been a believer. We have to have manufacturing in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
The issue, though, is that the semiconductor companies actually are making a lot of money. I mean, they return a lot of money to shareholders. So the issue now is what kind of constraints the Biden administration will put on them in terms of the use of that money. But I think it's a very good thing to initiate. It's a very good thing to do. And basically, but in terms of manufacturing, only two big companies in the U.S. Will be able to do manufacturing of advanced chips. One is Intel. The other one is GlobalFoundries. So it really, from the advanced big investment, we only have two real players. Micron could also do it, by the way, for memory. But for non-memory, for the microprocessor and so on, we have two companies. Now, TSMC is putting a plant in near Phoenix, and initially it's going to be a small plant, 20,000 wafers a month. But they bought big land. So hopefully they will use that big land to basically make much bigger capacity, a reasonable size factory at the advanced technologies, 100,000 wafers a month, and that's probably going to cost you $50
billion. Dr. Handel Jones, what a great opportunity to have someone with your level of expertise here on the Bill Buckmaster Show. Very, very grateful to you. Just to sort of wrap it up with a nice, pretty bow, though, what I'm hearing, though, is there's some problems right now. You don't really forecast it as a very long-term crisis yet, as long as we can build our manufacturing to start catching up with the supply side of things, correct? Is that a reasonable summary?
Well, not quite. I think we do have some significant problems from manufacturing semiconductors. We need a different mindset than we've had in the past, and I think Intel and GlobalFoundries are showing that. We need the government support to encourage investment, not increase taxes on assets and so on. But it's going to be a problem. It's a challenge for the next 10 years. And U.S., when they have a challenge, tends to respond positively. And we have to respond positively, otherwise the situation will get worse.
Are there other things, sir? There's a lot of moving parts in this business. Are there other things, subsets of what it takes to manufacture the wafers that we also need to be keeping an eye on, like rare earth metals? Or is there somewhere else down along this supply chain where a link can crack?
Well, the supply chain for semiconductors is very complicated. And with the manufacturing gravity or central gravity going to Asia, a lot of those capabilities are also in Asia. So in addition to making the chips, we have to package the chips. So Intel is committing, I think, $3.5 billion to the Rio Rancho facility, which is good. But, yeah, we have to build a complete supply chain, and that's going to take time. That's going to take money. You know, we estimate basically potentially 10 years before U.S. is in a good supply chain position. 10 years, not 5 years.
So, but short advice for someone like me, sir, if I really do need an air conditioner, now might be the time to get it, maybe buy an extra cell phone, or is that just going to make things worse? We're pushing the demand side of things out of control. More toilet paper.
Well, the output is increasing, so we think there's going to be a balance between supply and demand by Q2 of next year at the latest. So I think the short-term shortages will be behind us. No, I wouldn't rush out to buy an air conditioner or anything like that. But I think I would be thinking about, if I'm going to have an electric car in future, do I have enough battery? Will there be enough electricity supply for me? And is the ecosystem going to support, you know, the transitions to the new concepts?
Wow. Okay, so you've got, here's my suggestion, Doctor. This is Ben's dumb suggestion. I think Ford and GM should go back and build retro lines of vehicles that don't have chips and are resistant to EMP attack. How does that sound?
Well, we think they should accelerate what they do, move to new technology, and make sure they build a supply chain, because Apple has been able to do it. If Apple can do it, Apple, you don't have a shortage of Apple phones. If Apple can do it, the automobile companies can do it. And we really hope they will, and we're actually supporting them, by the way.
Dr. Jones, thanks so much for spending time with us today here on the Buckmaster Show. We truly appreciate it, sir.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Ben Buehler-Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster, guest hosting. A little tip out there for those of you who want to be a radio star. I'm not, but when you start the show, turn on your headphones. Sorry about that, Bill. We'll be coming back with a little letter for the listeners from Bill and something that is even rarer than a microchip in the desert. We'll be talking with the folks from the 390th Memorial Museum. Stick around. You're not going to want to miss it. Give us a call, 790-2040.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. And your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience, prioritizing social distancing and safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures that your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo. Enjoy the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley. Savor the view while sipping on locally brewed craft beer and enjoying gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, at West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehops.com. Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster, folks. Bill Buckmaster Show, folks. This is your guest host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Hey, don't forget, Silver City and Grant County are ready to welcome you back with open arms. Just 3 hours east of Tucson, there's a lot to do in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico, including hiking in the Gila National Forest. There's plenty of social distancing and visiting the famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. For a complete listing of the many things to do and great places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org. Great place to escape the Tucson summer heat. Now, regular listeners know that Bill has been away from us, enjoying the great lands of Alaska. You might also know that it's maybe not been the ideal vacation for Bill, and he asked me just to read a little letter to his listeners here. Stand by. Everyone, myself included, knocks social media at times during a life crisis. It's a lifeline. I thank each of you who have sent healing energy my way. It helps. It's now day 3 since the accident, and I won't sugarcoat the situation. It's challenging. I'm trying to be mindful and take one step carefully at a time. Anne, who's an angel, tells me to hang in. I ask you to do the same today. Have a great day. Bill, take care of yourself and hurry back, please. Hurry back. Ladies and gentlemen, as we're talking about the hot summer in Tucson, one of my favorite places to visit to get cool and also learn a heck of a lot about history might be one of the best-kept secrets in Tucson, but hopefully we can change that a little bit today. It's the 390th Memorial Museum. It's located on the grounds of the Pima Air and Space Museum, and they just opened up a brand new visit exhibit. It's very exciting. Joining us today to talk about that are Aaron Mendibles.
Very good.
You're pretty good, huh?
Yes.
The museum's director of communication, and May Casey, their curator. May, welcome to the Buckmaster Show
as
well.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Aaron, give us a quick overview of the 390th, why you're there, and what folks will see.
The 390th Memorial Museum tells the story of the 390th Bombardment Group during World War II. We have a fully restored B-17G model plane on the first level. As you go up to the second level, we have a nose art display, a POW display, our brand new jacket exhibit upstairs, and an exhibit about the Chowhound mission. So it is a, when you leave there, you are really truly understanding a little bit more about what the 390th Bombardment Group did, but also just a little bit more about World War II history.
And there's lots of just wonderful, honestly, I love going to the Pima Air and Space Museum. I'm a regular. A lot of those exhibits are outdoors, which, you know, they have night hours during the summer, but still, you know, in July, a little toasty coming off that aluminum out there on the desert floor. But the 390th completely enclosed and really a museum within a museum.
We are a museum within a museum. We have great air conditioning inside, and we are fully enclosed in the middle of the Pima Air and Space Museum. So we are a separate museum within their museum.
Now, May, coming to you, you really started your job, what, like 48 hours before the pandemic started? Hey, congratulations.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Yeah, that was pretty much what happened. I signed my offer letter and then we closed the museum and I thought, okay, that's it. But I was very lucky. They said, no, you're our curator. So that was exciting. The less exciting part was that I knew absolutely nothing about the collection that I was curating. And that is kind of what led us to the jacket exhibit, was I'd be going in on days the museum was closed to take pictures and figure things out.
Well, and that's, I'm an optimist. And I mean, that was my thought, is that gave you, the closures gave you plenty of time to sort of explore and get more familiar with your trusts, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely.
So tell us about these jackets. Let's start from the beginning.
Sure. So I came in one day, and these jackets were, they used to be at the entrance to the museum. There are 9 of them. They had been on display in that location for almost 10 years, and then at a different part in the museum before the renovation. And so I was taking my pictures, and I saw a moth, which is a curatorial nightmare. And I looked at the cuffs and the waistbands, which are wool and, you know, breeding grounds for moths, and I saw quite a bit of damage. And so I panicked, because we have these priceless, you know, treasures, and they're being eaten. So without thought, immediately got them out of there, started researching how do you kill moths without killing 80-year-old leather. And then we were lucky enough, there's a gentleman who's writing a book on A2 flying jackets, John Slemp, and he had come and taken very high resolution photos in 2014. So we were able to compare the photos to the jackets, and we determined that the moth damage was older, there was no current infestation. But then the problem was, we had these jackets that were falling apart, and we couldn't in good conscience put them back out.
How many jackets are we talking about?
So there were 9 that we had conserved, okay. But the actual collection the 390th has is close to 40.
It's so, the largest collection in the United States.
No kidding.
Yeah.
John has told us that he's gone around taking pictures pretty much everywhere. I think the only place he hasn't gotten to take pictures is Tuskegee. And he says we have a huge collection.
So again, just to clarify, I mean, anybody who's seen a classic World War II film with the bombers, and to some extent, I mean, the fighter pilots had some, but these are the bomber jackets. They're the sort of trim cut. They're good-looking jackets and maybe the very first wearable art.
Yes.
Ever.
Yeah, I would agree with that. They were the second version from the A1, which is what Charles Lindbergh wore. They were developed for practicality, but they did become an expression of style. So, yeah, if you watch The Great Escape, which is 1963, Steve McQueen, he's wearing an A2. It's the quintessential jacket.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question or comment, feel free to call us on the Buckmaster Live Line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. That number is 790-2040. A lot of great history, not here in studio with me. They're very young, but we're talking about some great history right here in Tucson at the 390th Memorial Museum. Now, these jackets, there's a video on YouTube that people can find where you're sort of describing and doing sort of an introduction to this new exhibit.
Yes, sir.
And every jacket tells a story, and to me that's just fascinating. And maybe walk us through, so as I understand it, the Department of the Army at that time or somebody higher up said, you know, there was a certain incident.
Yes, the Murder Incorporated incident.
Tell us about Murder Incorporated and how that became a big to-do about nothing.
Right. Yes, essentially. So the Murder Incorporated incident occurred in 1943 when 3 men were taken POW after their plane went down, and their jackets all said Murder Incorporated on it. And John told me, actually, when they went into the POW camp, they said, you should not have that. So they stayed up all night scraping the paint off their jackets. But the propaganda machine, the Nazi propaganda machine, which was very effective, had already gotten a hold of it, and they ran wild. And they said it was the Air Force's official slogan, and it meant, you know, the United States is coming for your children and your homes. And so the higher ups thought, well, that's not a good look. We're not gonna allow this. But the reality on the ground was that, you know, these guys, they were so young, they were doing these great, amazing, terrifying things. That's not a battle that you want to fight, you know.
Now, not everybody got a jacket. In some ways, that jacket, the A2 jacket, was sort of a symbol of achieving a certain level of proficiency, correct?
Yes, absolutely. The grounds crew had their own jackets, but they weren't the A2. The A2 flying jacket originally just went to pilots, and then as you moved into bombers that had crews of 10 and they were cold, they obviously needed to receive them as well. But you didn't get your jacket until you'd completed the first part of your pilot training, which was about 12 weeks. So it was sort of a graduation symbol of sorts. There wasn't any big fancy ceremony. They just kind of handed them out of boxes, but the symbol was just huge.
And every jacket is unique. I mean, they all start out, here's something else. You would think that a leather jacket would be cowhide, but apparently they weren't.
They were not. They were at the beginning horsehide with a silk lining. And then, you know, as the war went on and supply chains changed, then you brought in a goat hide.
So was the horsehide just because of the war shortages or some?
I honestly, it's been hard to find the answer to that, but the closest I got was that these jackets, the back is one single panel. There's no seam because they were concerned when they're moving around the quarters, you know, they'd get caught on something. Mm-hmm. A B-17 looks huge on the outside, but on the inside, it's a different story. And you have 10 men in there and they're trying to move quickly. So what I had read had indicated that using horse leather allowed them to have that one big back panel and not have to have a seam down the middle of it.
And how was the art applied? Is this just paint, basic? I mean, it's not watercolors, obviously.
No.
But I mean, were the airmen themselves doing this?
Sometimes.
Or was there a local shoemaker that they went to?
Actually, it could be either or both. It just depended. Some of the guys on the crew, particularly the ones that had all the same art, maybe, you know, the navigator, the radio operator did it for them, and they used, you know, whatever paint was on base, which was probably not the best paint. It didn't last as well. But then, you know, these guys, they were near Parham, so they would go into town, and you could hire someone to paint your jacket, and those are a little more professional.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you're enjoying this segment. We'll be back with a little bit more from the 390th Memorial Museum. This is your guest host, Ben Bueller Garcia, sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your guest host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We've got a great segment again. Now we're talking to the 390th Memorial Museum with Erin Mendibles. She is their director of communications, and Mae Casey, the curator of all things special out there. And we're talking about some jackets that are absolutely special. If you'd like to make a comment or give us some feedback, call us on the Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management Live Line. That number is 790-2040. Erin, I mentioned there is on YouTube, there's a video of the introduction of the jackets and kind of a walkthrough of what's going on. But there's, you also mentioned you've got another special event coming up, but it's pretty exclusive.
Yeah, so we last weekend did a event for the jackets and unveiling, and this Saturday will be a museum member only event. It will be virtual, it's not in person. You do need to be a museum member, and it will be with our conservator, Rachel Waters. She will be explaining everything that went into the conservation of these jackets, how she was chosen. Mae will be there to speak about that. And it's one more added value to becoming a museum member. It's $40 to be a member at the 390th Memorial Museum. You get into Titan Missile Museum, Pima Air and Space, and of course you get into our museum. So it's just adding value.
And give our listeners that website again.
So it's 390th.org. And then to join, it's 390th.org/join.
Now, this is particularly to your job, folks, and correct me if I'm wrong here, because obviously I'm wrong quite a bit, but completely privately supported?
The 390th Memorial Museum is supported by a foundation, the Moeller Foundation. So we do not charge an additional fee when people come through our door, but we do rely heavily on people's donations. We also accept donations when people walk through our door. We do ask for people to at least give a dollar per person when they come through the door, but we do accept donations. And the jacket, you know, exhibit was paid for solely through donations, private donations. So we do accept those.
May, when this was, pardon the expression, thrown in your lap, you've got these nine just beautiful jackets that need a little bit of tender care.
Yes.
Here, May, go fix this. By the way, we've got no money.
Yeah.
And what was the price tag?
During COVID, by the way.
During COVID, yeah.
During COVID. So we looked at, first of all, the conservation process, which would be stabilizing, cleaning, and then how can we display them responsibly in a way where they're temperature controlled, they're safe from pests and dirt and humidity. And the price tag was $32,000, which is a lot of money, just generally speaking, but particularly for a small nonprofit museum in Tucson. So we decided to launch a campaign called Adopt a Jacket to encourage people to give to help us restore them. And people came through for us in a way I never could have dreamed. And we hit our goal in 7 months during a pandemic.
During a pandemic.
Just incredible. Just incredible.
You should get some kind of medal from the Nonprofit Association for that. And I encourage folks this, you know, we're talking about it and hopefully we're giving you a good description, but you really need to go out there and see these beauties. Everyone is unique. Every airman had a different way of describing or kind of creating a pictogram of their experience at the war. A lot of them have got 35 bombs on them to establish the fact that they completed their 35 requisite missions before they had to go home. One jacket has two little parachutes on it, and I'll leave it up to you to figure out what happened to that flyer and make your own decision. We've got a special guest, I think. Is this Mayor Tom Murphy calling us on the voice?
It is, Ben. Nice
Hi, Tom Murphy.
Hi. I just wanted to call in and congratulate the staff. We had, Ben may be aware of it, we had a resident turning 98 years old in March, and he was a B-17 pilot, and he's been a docent there for about 30 years. And it was a surprise birthday party, and I was just so happy and honored to be included in that presentation and celebration. And it's just an amazing museum within a museum. The pictures, the jacket, the B-17, the Jeep. It's well worth a visit, and to celebrate really a great American hero like Colonel Bouchon, it was really a very fun event.
Yeah, Mayor Murphy came and he gave a proclamation to Colonel Bouchon. Richard Bouchon comes every Thursday, and he has been doing so for the last 29 years as a docent. He's there on Thursdays from about 10 to 2:30 in the afternoons. And he has a great book called My Wars that he talks about his time with the 390th. He was a pilot, went on to fly in the Korean War, did some missions, and then went on to fly in the Vietnam War. So he was had a lasting career in the military. And we are so lucky to have him at our museum every Thursday. And he loves to say, the good Lord willing and the creek don't rise, he'll be back the next week. So,
yeah.
And we don't let the creek rise down in
That is a true story. Yes. Green Valley News. Dan Shear has been very good to us as well. He loves his Richard Bouchon.
Mayor Murphy, thanks so much for calling the Bill Buckmaster Show.
Absolutely. Good to hear from you, Ben. Thanks.
Take care, Tom. Bye-bye. Yeah, he makes a very good point, because that's one thing I love about your museum. You're not just seeing the history on display there, whether it's from the the B-17 bomber to the jackets to some of the other things, but you're also hearing it. I mean, literally, you have guys like Dick Bouchon who are there who lived it, who survived it, and are sharing it. And so nothing warms my heart better than to see him out there talking to a young, you know, an 8 or a 9 or a 10-year-old. Then maybe they'll have him autograph his book. And there's just a lot of power in that. And that's something that's pretty unique with your facility.
Yeah, and we have a lot of events for people. You know, our next event will be June 26th. It hasn't been launched yet, but it's a very special event that will involve Richard Bouchon with a print that is being made of his last go, which was his 12 and a half mission, or what does he call it? April 12 and a half. He doesn't call it April 13th. Mm-hmm. It was his 28th mission, and it's quite an event that will be planned. So, you know, keep an eye out at 390th.org for all the information. We are very, very good on social media. Our Instagram is 390thMMF, and as well as TikTok. We have videos on there that have over 60,000 views. And for a small museum like us, that's pretty cool. So, you know, we try and do historical posts on Facebook, but to get those fun videos, you gotta head over to Instagram and TikTok.
And you've got virtual tours.
We do.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
May, I don't know if this is an apt comparison, but mm-hmm. Some museums I've been associated with, they're like icebergs in that a lot of the stuff that you have is not, you just don't have enough room to put it all on display. How much do you still have that's in the back rooms? And can you give us a little hint of what might be coming down the line here next?
Well, funny that you say that, because we just will be having a video series on social media coming out about our archives. And so May's done a great job kind of giving us a sneak peek into the archives, and those will be rolling out. The first one went out today on our stories on Instagram and Facebook, so people can get a sneak peek to see just what we have in there.
Who's narrating those? Because there's a guy right behind the glass there that's got a terrific voice.
Yeah. May Casey.
Okay.
Yes, to my chagrin. You're absolutely right. I love your iceberg comparison. We have an enormous collection. I would say about 75% of it is behind the scenes. Many people don't realize we're a museum, but we also have a very big archive, and we have a library filled with books that were actually written by men in the 390th. So it's very, very powerful. We are hoping, you know, to continue moving across the second floor. That's where the jackets are. They're on the mezzanine level. And next go to our POW exhibit. The POW story is a tremendous part of the 390th story. They actually had more POWs than they had KIAs. And so it's a huge part of the history and their survival and their success. So we want to expand what we have right now because we have great things that we can show to teach people.
Now, May, one of the comments you made on that video, I really appreciated, because I'm guessing, mm-hmm. you know, these jackets came to you. You're not out there buying them at swap meets.
No.
Maybe you are, but I'm guessing not.
No.
Normally, it's family members that are donating yes. it. But it's not just the items. It's the information. You've got at least yeah. one of those jackets. You mm-hmm. don't know anything about this flyer. Mm-hmm. They're a ghost on the internet.
Yes.
And so any of you out there who might be listening, who've got friends or relatives, it's not just a thing. I mean, they love your stuff, mm-hmm. but also any information you can provide. If you right. have a family member that was involved with the 390th during the Second World War, please contact them.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a huge part of what we try to do.
And visit 390th.org. There's a ton of information there for people, and it does have links to everything. Our Museum from Home series is very well done, and people can learn a lot about just what it was that the men of the 390th Bombardment Group did for our country.
And this is not mm-hmm. just for Tucsonans. I mean, this signal reaches all over Southern Arizona, but
oh,
so
great.
Folks can become members. But
oh,
any
absolutely.
Place, if they when they hear this podcast and they want to support you, they can be a member from anywhere, correct?
Yeah. Absolutely. We send out the Square J, which is this last one was 20 pages, mm-hmm. a full color magazine. And we mail those to Holland, to England. I mean, we have members all over the world. So yes, in fact, they can.
Ladies and gentlemen, remind them of the website.
390th.org.
And do you have extended hours during the summer?
Starting June 1st, we will be closing at 2:30 per Pima Air and Space. They close at 3 starting June 1st because it just gets so darn hot here. So we open 10 a.m. Until June 1st, 10 a.m. to 4:30. Our last admission is at 4. And starting June 1st, we will be 10 a.m. to 2:30 with our last admission at 2 p.m.
Aaron and May, thank you so much for joining us here on the Bill Buckmaster Show. Ladies and gentlemen, there you go. Bill is enjoying a vacation. You should be tuning in every single day, but a special invitation to join me on Thursday, May 27th for a special Memorial Day show. One of our featured guests was a guard at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. You're not going to want to miss that. Podcasts of all of these shows can be found at buckmastershow.com. Bill, take care of yourself. Return to us in one piece. Tune in every day, folks. Take care.